This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, January 15th, 2021. There are fewer hospital beds devoted to people with COVID-19 in Arkansas. In yesterday's reporting from the Arkansas Department of Health, 67 fewer virus patients listed in the state's hospitals, but still nearly 1,300 people with the disease in the state's hospitals. The ADH also reporting an additional 42 deaths and an additional 2,491 confirmed and probable cases. Springdale-based Tyson Foods announced this week it plans to provide the COVID-19 vaccine to frontline workers. The company will partner with Matrix Medical Network to deploy health units to Tyson's facilities with staff that will vaccinate employees and provide education about the vaccine. The Arkansas National Guard is sending troops to Washington, D.C. to assist with security during the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden Wednesday. The Guard will deploy about 500 soldiers, primarily from the 142nd Field Artillery Brigade based in northwest Arkansas, and airmen from the 189th Airlift Wing. They'll be deployed Sunday and are scheduled to return to Arkansas before the end of January. This is a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large, our weekly conversation with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics in fewer than 10 minutes. Reporters are being warned by their news bureaus and press associations to take precautions while covering possible armed pro-Trump protests expected in all 50 states, including Arkansas, this weekend, leading up to Wednesday's presidential inauguration. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, anti-media bias expressed by the Trump administration has given way to overt violence against reporters.
President Donald Trump has for years called mainstream media in speeches and tweets fake news and an enemy of the people. That rhetoric incited followers to mostly heckle news reporters covering Trump events. But during last week's Trump rally in Washington, D.C., which resulted in an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, the mob destroyed broadcast equipment, shoved reporters, and screamed ominous threats. Arkansas Democrat Gazette Washington, D.C. correspondent Frank Lockwood was an eyewitness to the unfolding violence.
I was down for the rally itself, and the level of hatred that some of these protesters have for major American institutions, including the media, was almost palpable.
From the rally, a crowd of Trump supporters marched down Pennsylvania Avenue to the U.S. Capitol, where they stormed the building to disrupt Congress from certifying the 2020 electoral votes, a majority cast for President-elect Joe Biden.
You know, you see people carrying signs that say, you know, CNN traitors or treason or that sort of thing. And these aren't, you know, signs that have been drawn by people with their magic markers. These are people that have had professional looking signs. They've thought about it. They've probably spent some money. And they hate the media so much that they'll carry around signs calling them traitors and guilty of treason.
Lockwood wrote a firsthand account of the insurrection published the following day in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. He detailed the atmosphere from inside the Capitol as the angry mob smashed their way towards both House and Senate chambers.
I realized that if they got into the chambers, it was not going to be good news for congressmen. It wasn't going to be good news for journalists either. And so I began thinking about a potential escape plan. And I thought, well, I'll take off my tie, took it off, folded it up, tucked it in my pocket. I'll take off my press credentials, hide those away, take off my sports jacket, and I'll take my computer and have it in my arm. And if I get within eyesight of insurrectionist, I'll just drop the coat on the ground. I'll just toss the computer to the side and make a go for it and hope for the best.
U.S. Capitol Police, after evacuating lawmakers and staff, shepherded Lockwood and other reporters to safety, all the while urging them to hurry, he says. but video of a CNN crew being viciously attacked by Trump protesters outside the Capitol indicate a critical paradigm shift.
Reporters have been targets, certainly, of criticism for a very long time. And so, you know, that was just part of the climate, and you know, nobody really took it seriously. But it's gone from that sort of rhetoric to, you know, those guys aren't our friends, to most of the media is evil, much of the media is evil, all of the media is evil. That's kind of the way that it has gone.
Due to Trump's aggressive anti-media rhetoric, reporters across the political spectrum are at risk, Lockwood says. As a member of the Washington, D.C. Press Corps, Lockwood maintains an office in the National Press Building where he covers events of particular interest to Arkansans, including the upcoming inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. And he remains on high alert. On January 11th, the FBI issued a memo to law enforcement agencies across the country warning that armed protests by pro-Trump supporters could occur in all 50 states starting this weekend through next Wednesday's inauguration ceremonies, which Lockwood plans to cover.
And if there is any way possible that I can safely be present to witness and report about that transition of power, I will be there.
Lockwood, who's covered secessionist patriot militias in Oregon, believes the danger stemming from the attack on the U.S. Capitol is far from over.
And we have had a constant drumbeat trying to undermine confidence in basic American institutions, free and fair elections. Now we're paying the consequences. People have been told for months or years that the elections are fixed, that the system is corrupt, that leadership cannot be trusted, and that democracy is suspect. And what do you know? You repeat that kind of thing for years, and people start to believe it.
We queried the Arkansas Press Association for comment, no response. But Luke Story, executive director and president of the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, agreed to talk. Story says since last week, he's received notices from members about media threats.
I started to receive images that were being shared with me that of just callous messages aimed at broadcast and journalists and other members of the media that were saying things such as murder to the media. And it left me for the first time in my journalistic career, it left me feeling legitimately concerned, not only for my safety, my family's safety, and all of my fellow journalists. It left me feeling as though there was a legitimate threat for our safety.
Following last week's attack on Congress, Story issued an email warning to members that media remains in the crosshairs in the aftermath of the Capitol riots. The Arkansas FBI office, he says, has offered help in the coming days to credentialed reporters covering any protests and inaugural celebrations in Arkansas.
We are the fifth estate of democracy, and with that comes the duty to keep our public informed with truth and factual reports. And with that, now comes these threats that we're facing, and we have to stay true to the fact that that's the burden we carry.
This week, NPR issued an email warning to stations of more planned pro-Trump protests starting this weekend through next week's inauguration, providing clear safety guidance. Lee Wood is general manager of NPR affiliate KUAF Public Radio, which broadcasts Ozarks at Large. The station, a licensee of the University of Arkansas, is located in downtown Fayetteville, and it's locked and secure, she says.
But UAPD is aware of our situation as a media outlet and that we are off campus. And so they know that if anything threatening does occur, that we will be in immediate contact with them and with Fayetteville PD as well.
Wood says she's also advised staff to be on heightened alert since the attack on the U.S. Capitol. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. Michael, welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Well, thanks for having me back. I'm glad you're better, back on the trail.
For various reasons, we haven't talked in a while. There was Christmas and there was New Year's. Then I was home with COVID-19, which I'm better now, thank you. So it's been darn near a month since you and I have talked. 10 months ago, I don't think either one of us would have seen coming, and that was the final total number of Fort Smith building permits, which was up for the year.
Yes, and like we have talked about this, so your listeners may be tired of this phrase, but yeah, back when March turned into April, if you would have told me that the building sector in Fort Smith would be booming at the end of the year, I would have probably wanted to have you drug tested. but that's what happened. The building permits in Fort Smith, Greenwood, and Van Buren ended the year just a little over $254 million, which is up almost 10%, 9.5% for the year. And it's a 14% increase over 2018. It's just nuts. And Fort Smith, which is the biggest bulk of that, is $234 million. That was up 14.5%. That's a huge increase for the city permits. And what we saw is a lot of commercial construction. We saw the finishing out of school district. The school district work, for the most part, there was almost a $21 million new rehab, that Mercy Rehab Hospital out at Chaffee Crossing, and then various, believe it or not, restaurants. Crane Key is building a $4.5 million new auto park or auto facility in Fort Smith. So just a lot of that, and then a healthy bit of residential construction, which we'll have a story hopefully we can talk about next week with Metro home sales. We're up by double digits for the year again, something no one would have predicted. But look, you had low interest rates. Again, you had some of these public projects. You had projects that were already booked before pandemic, and folks went ahead with them. So it was an interesting year. I know your question is, how is this going to go into 2021? I'm not going to say. I think for the last couple of years, I've said I just don't see how it's going to keep pace. Mm-hmm. And then it does. So I don't want to be wrong for like 3 or 4 years in a row.
You know, in any year, this would be good economic news. In a year that was marred by a pandemic, it's good news because those were jobs that kept going when it was a very tough year. People kept getting paychecks because they were able to work.
Yes, sir. I mean, the construction industry is important. Not only that, but one of the things that I think some people often overlook is all that construction requires steel and nails and wood and shingles and this and that. And a lot of that gets purchased in the area, which adds to the sales tax revenue for the cities and counties. So that's obviously what is to help boost in the sales tax revenue for the cities and counties in the area, for most of them anyway, are up over 2019, which is another surprise for the year.
If I were to see a list of Fort Smith officials' hopes for 2021, there'd been an item on there that's probably been on that list for some time, and that's get something into part of the old Whirlpool building. Turns out something is going to go into part of the old Whirlpool building.
Yep, about 300,000 square foot of that building. Now, Hytrol, Jonesboro-based Hytrol, announced about a week or so ago that they're going to expand out of Jonesboro and build this, invest about $20 million to open this manufacturing plant in this part of the former Whirlpool. Now, 300,000 square feet sounds like a lot, but remember that building is roughly 1.2 million square feet. And Spartan Company out of Ohio, which owns it now, they've got a lot of it leased. I did not get an answer back from Spartan, but I doubt after this 300,000 square foot is used, I'm not sure there won't be a big bulk of the building left. A lot of it's used, for example, by Mars Pet Care, which has a manufacturing operation in Fort Smith. They use it for warehousing and logistics, and there are other folks who are using that building. For the most part, the building has been put back to use. The downside is it's not producing the jobs that were there when Whirlpool had it active. But anyway, this company, it makes conveyor belt systems and other material handling systems. And if you think about Kyle, what's going on in the world since pandemic hit with people buying online. Imagine all those warehouses, all those distribution fulfillment centers that have had to be set up.
True.
They all need these conveyor belt systems, these material handling systems. So Hytrol has been going gangbusters. They're going to add 250 jobs, they say, within 5 years. They're apparently almost $20 an hour jobs, which you figure in wages and salary. That's not bad for the Fort Smith metro area. So a little bit of good news. They're beginning hiring now, but it'll be later this year. It is this year. This is 2021.
Yeah.
It'll be later this year before obviously they get it up and going. But that's good news. And I've been the tease is that I've been told is that there may be some other good news related to the manufacturing sector for Fort Smith in the near future. So fingers crossed.
You know, Hytrol has been in Arkansas for 58 years, but I bet many of us on this side of the state hadn't heard of it until this past week.
No, look, it's not a small company. They employ almost 1,200 people in Jonesboro, in the Jonesboro area. And that's one of the reasons they moved. They didn't want to put all of their employment, all their operations eggs in one basket, so to speak. They wanted to kind of diversify where their locations are, which any smart company will want to do. But yeah, this isn't a little mom-and-pop operation.
All right, finally, I'm an alum of Midway Elementary School, a school that was closed to consolidation decades ago. When I went back years later to look at my old elementary school, it had been turned into a worm farm. True story.
Wow.
I'm not sure that Hartford High School is going to be turned into a worm farm, but it's up for sale.
Yeah, it's up for sale, and I don't even know if I want to tell this story. I can't beat a worm farm story. Hartford Public Schools consolidated with Hackett Public Schools, both south of Fort Smith. They consolidated in 2014, and the Hackett schools they pretty much shut that little Hartford facility down, and they're trying to get rid of it. It's pretty costly, albatross. It costs about $500,000 a year just to keep it open, and they have no students through there, so it's just it's dead weight, so to speak. They've had a charter school or two look at it to buy it, but nothing's happened, and so they decided to sell it. So Sean Looper with Looper Auction, they're going to put it up for auction in early February, and I don't know. We don't get many stories of an entire school complex going up for sale, but this is about 20 acres. It includes, of course, a high school building, a gymnasium. There's an old rock gym. Mm. It's got a football field, a baseball field. I think some of the land that tracks can be sold separately. I heard some comments. Some folks said, hey, they ought to buy it and put in apartments. Someone said, well, Alice Walton ought to buy it. What's the children's camp that they do? Camp Ozark?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Camp Ozark South or some kind of camp for kids in the South. So who knows? They're hoping to get, the Hackett School District is hoping to get at least $600,000 out of it, because I think that's a bond note that they have on the property, so they're hoping to get at least that. But if anybody wants to buy a school for cheap, you've never dreamed of it, here's your chance.
And it will sell, they said, no matter where the bids are.
Yes, sir.
It's going.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an absolute auction, so it will sell on that day. I spent many years trying to get out of high school. I'm not interested in getting back into one.
I concur. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read about these stories and so many others at talkbusiness.net. Michael, good to talk to you. Let's plan to do it again next Friday.
Hey, good to talk to you. I appreciate it, and will do.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Northwest Arkansas Martin Luther King Jr. Council is celebrating its 25th anniversary, and this year's celebration of Dr. King includes a series of
mostly virtual events that begin this weekend. To learn more, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda spoke with Council President John L. Colbert earlier this week. He's one of the founders of the Northwest Arkansas Celebration and says the event has grown quite a bit from its inception a quarter century ago.
Doing the march and all that, that's more like 35 years. And but the banquet and celebration is 25, because what was happening, since we did not have a local banquet here, my pastor and some of us, we would travel to Fort Smith to their celebration. And so I would never forget it. The pastor called me in one Sunday morning and says, "Deacon Colbert, we can do better than this. We need to create our own MLK banquet in Fayetteville. You need to get on that and get it done." And so because of his determination, his, well, directive, I had to form a group of members out of St. James Missionary Baptist Church. And we form a MLK planning, we call it planning committee at that time, to plan out a banquet and all that stuff. And from the directive that my pastor had given me, that we need to go ahead and create a annual recommitment banquet. So 25 years ago, from that conversation in his office on a Sunday morning at St. James Missionary Baptist Church, the Northwest Arkansas MLK Planning Committee was formed. That's how it began.
How has it grown over the last
25
years?
Oh my goodness, it has grown. I remember that first year, we were so happy that we can give out two scholarships for $500 each. That's two, $500,000. But now we give $30,000 at the annual celebration. And then that first year, we had about 125 people to attend. Now we're up to about 700 attendees. So it has really grown. And we have the great support from Northwest Arkansas. University of Arkansas has really been an outstanding supporter the entire time. So we really appreciate them for supporting the effort. And then the mayor office, city of Fayetteville, and some other Walmart and all, and Tyson's, they all have been very good supporting us financially so we could continue to give out the scholarship to deserving students and from Northwest Arkansas. So it's been a nice evolution from, you know, two scholarship to what we give 25 scholarship, $30,000 a year, to from 150 people attending to almost 700 something. So that's a big transformation. So it's been great. Yes.
It's a very big transformation. And this year is going to be a transformation as well with the pandemic.
Yes.
I'm sure you could not have envisioned something like this 25 years ago, but take me through what some of your planning has been like and what you guys are doing instead.
You know, as we was thinking about Dr. King and the civil rights movement and all that stuff, and what they went through is small to what we're doing through COVID. COVID is hard. But as I think about what those civil rights leaders had to do and what Dr. King had to do and endure, this is just a piece of cake. But it has changed the format. We still have that determination that we're still going to celebrate his life and legacy, but there's going to be a lot of virtual meetings and virtual Zooming for us to do this celebration. So we have a nice slate of events that is we going right on as though we were there live. So it's not going to stop us. And so therefore, we have decided to do the majority of the events via Zoom so that the community at large can join us and to this celebration.
And we said the majority of them are virtual. I guess the one thing that I noticed that is not virtual is the food drive.
Right. Yeah, I guess I should say 98% of the events are virtual except for the food drive. Yes, right. That is going to kick off the celebration. You know, Dr. King believed in giving back. We, too, believe in giving back to our community. So we're asking the community to join us on Saturday, January the 16th from 9 until 12. They have to sign up. We have put the information out on Facebook. They have to, because, you know, we have to follow all the CDC guidelines,
right,
social distances and all that, wearing the mask. So if they're going to ask to come and help us, they need to sign up and select a time, because they can come from 9 to 10, 10 to 11, We're 11 to 12, so we can keep those numbers down because we will be working inside of the pantry trying to organize the food in different bags and all that. Now, if you cannot attend in person, you can drop off non-perishable goods. They're at the center, and that address is 115 South Willow. And so on Tuesdays, it's the working hours from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. that they can do, or they can come like on that Saturday, because we will be there on the 16th, that they can bring the canned goods there.
And then on Sunday, there is a memorial service. Tell me a little bit about that. I'm more familiar with the banquet, so I was curious about this.
Right. That would be the second thing that we do. That is a memorial program that is co-sponsored by the Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity. You remember Dr. King was an Alpha. And so I'm an Alpha too. So we as brothers would like to put that program on, the memorial program, where we do have a keynote speaker, where we honor Dr. King and his life. We have singing, of course, and we have that keynote speaker who's going to come and speak to us to deliver the address, which, you know, is still the theme is united. It is up to us to choose unity over division. So we're looking forward to having that speaker. We encourage the public to jump on that Zoom and be with us to hear a good message and also some good singing and then some greetings from the local fraternities in the Northwest Arkansas Council.
And Monday morning, you have your virtual youth breakfast.
Yeah. You know that we believe in order for the dream to continue, we have to start with the youth. So therefore, the youth plays a very important part in this. I'm the advisor to a group called the Dream Keepers. That group between the ages 9 to 16, they put on that program, invite other youth from Northwest Arkansas to join us so that they too can let people know that they believe in Dr. King's legacy and dream and that they are responsible to making sure the dream continues through them as youth, because we're going to be moving off to sing. But so therefore, we teach them early that, hey, they're going to have to step up and carry out their dreams. So they'll be putting on the program, talking about the services that they do and what they stand for in order to make sure that the life and legacy of Dr. King continues.
And later that morning, a virtual Freedom March, first time for that.
Well, yes, 11:15. We're going to do this nice virtual march where we normally get everyone together and do the chants and do the singing. We're going to be doing the same thing there on the virtual Zoom that we're going to be doing for the march. So we encourage the community to please join us at 11:15 as we do a virtual march in honor of Dr. King.
And there's a vigil at noon and then the recommitment banquet in the evening. Who is your guest speaker this year?
Right. The guest speaker at the MLK recommitment celebration is no other than the person who is by my side as a young college student is going to help us do that. He's going to be the keynote speaker. His name is Kevin Detner. And I would never forget him either, because he's a go-getter. You know, I said, kid, you're just a college kid. Where did all this energy coming from? And so he was responsible for leading the Elfert there at the University of Arkansas. And actually he met with the chancellor and all that. And so he actually was very instrumental in making sure that the university would be off on that day 25 years ago for Dr. King's celebration. So from that 25 years ago until now, they're off in recognizing Dr. King's celebration. So we bring him back because he was very instrumental in working with us and being part of that first group to get the MLK celebration going.
And you mentioned that the theme this year is unity. What is the importance of uniting and coming together, especially given the climate that we are in right now nationally?
Exactly. And you know, you can imagine that theme actually evolved from what's been happening on the national scene. You know, we feel that it's time for us to unite together. It's time for this country to come together, because we are better than what we've been seeing lately, the division. That is not America. That is not us. That is not what Dr. King would have been asking us to do. He preached unity, coming together. And we know that Once he asked all of the white clergymen and everyone else to get involved, it made a difference in the civil rights march. So therefore, we too are saying, in order for us to get this right, in order for us to be united, in order for us to do away with this division, we have to come together as one. Unity is what we need to do. And guess who it's left up to? Us. Us. You and him and her. We have to do it, no one else. So therefore, we're asking those people with like mind, like we do, come and be with us. That's unite, so that we can show that we are not divided, we're united.
Thank you so much for your time today, and I hope everything goes well in this environment, and happy 25th anniversary.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it, and thank you for allowing us to share the events with the public, and we invite the public to come out and be with us. Thank you.
That was John L. Colbert, president of the Northwest Arkansas Martin Luther King Jr. Council. He spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda earlier this week. More information about this year's celebration, including links to the virtual events, available at nwamlk.org. Many industries across the state have been hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic, but the medical marijuana business is not one of them. As Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek tells us, 2020 was a good year for medical marijuana sales, which boosted the state's revenue.
While the start of Arkansas's medical marijuana program was fraught with years of delays, the industry has been on a roll since May 2019, when the first dispensary opened to customers in Hot Springs. And Scott Hardin, the spokesperson for the state's Medical Marijuana Commission, says the pandemic has done little to slow it down.
2020 was interesting. As we entered it, we were at a limited number of dispensaries, just a handful, less than 10. Sales started off fairly strong in January, February, again, a good month. And then we hit March, and right along with coronavirus and the notifications from the CDC that Arkansans or Americans need to certainly keep at least a two-week supply of medication on hand, you see this significant spike.
Hardin says the commission didn't expect that jump in sales would last, but it did.
It continued, and then it continued some more. So sales, I think, surprised us, to say the least.
The industry closed out 2020 at about $175 million in total sales, with 26,000 pounds of medical marijuana sold around the state.
At the rate we're going right now, it looks like 2021, it's safe to say we're going to do at least $250 million in sales in 2021.
When Arkansas voters passed the medical marijuana amendment in 2016, Hardin says the state started making projections by analyzing sales revenue generated in other states where medical marijuana had been legalized.
And so we projected that a mature market in the state would be 40,000 Arkansans with cards. And today we're well over 60,000. So that it exceeded our expectations. As far as sales, we didn't really know. It was a guessing game.
Hardin says that's because they didn't know how much product Arkansans would be purchasing every time they went to a dispensary. Amendment 98 allows patients in Arkansas to purchase 2.5 ounces of medical marijuana every 14 days.
Roughly, it's not quite $400 an ounce on average, but not far from it. So let's assume $400 an ounce. You're talking about $1,000 every 2 weeks. That is a significant purchase, and it's a lot to ask, but more and more you hear dispensaries saying that Arkansans are doing it, that you have quite a sizable number of people that do that every 2 weeks. They maximize that purchase.
According to Hardin, a number of factors contributed to the exponential growth in medical marijuana sales. One was the CDC recommendation to maintain a two-week supply of medication during the pandemic.
And then two, you look at the stimulus funds. I think that played a role, not just in medical marijuana, but the state economy in general. Again, Arkansas, we cut the projected forecast because we thought COVID-19 would have a bit of a bigger impact than it actually did.
And while the pandemic has visibly impacted people across Arkansas, Hardin says the overall economy has withstood the shutdowns, restrictions, and uncertainty. As of this week, for this fiscal year, which started in July, the state of Arkansas is $300 million above projections.
Combined with new dispensaries opening, you had a large number of patients that didn't want a card until it was within a reasonable drive of their home. And that's certainly understandable. So you take all those factors together, and I think that accounts for this spike in sales.
As far as the industry's contributions to state revenue, Hardin says medical marijuana patients pay a 6.5% state sales tax and a 4% privilege tax approved by the Arkansas legislature that's going toward establishing a national cancer institute at UAMS.
So if you go in and spend $100, you're going to spend $10.50 or 10.5% in state taxes. Looking at that $200 million, that's roughly $20 million that's been collected from medical marijuana sales, which again, going back to this common or ongoing theme, I think it's safe to say exceeded the state's expectation.
Which Hardin says is meeting the state's goal of having medical marijuana be a self-sustaining business, especially since regulating the industry requires everything from employees at the Department of Health who oversee issuing cards to patients to the alcohol beverage control agents who oversee compliance.
You have software, this are what we call our seed-to-sale software. So it takes quite a bit of revenue or funding to keep the industry going. But I think what we wanted to see going into this is for the industry to sustain itself. And I think it's safe to say it's doing that.
The state had fewer than 10 dispensaries at the start of 2020, but it ended the year with 32. Amendment 98 allows for 40 dispensaries total. So far, the commission has issued 38 licenses and two are still up for grabs in Southwest Arkansas. The amendment also allows for 8 growing licenses. Right now, 5 of them are in operation. Hardin says there's an ongoing conversation about whether there's enough supply to meet demand. Some dispensaries are fine, while others report they're running out of product.
As these remaining 3 cultivators come online, and one of the cultivators, the existing 5 that are growing, is moving to Pine Bluff under a new ownership group, and they're really going to expand their capacity. So there's going to be more product available, and it's going to be interesting as we progress in 2020 to see if, one, does the price drop as a result of that? And two, do patients have a wider selection?
The Medical Marijuana Commission voted in early 2020 that it was justified in issuing the remaining 3 growing licenses. But the existing 5 cultivators have filed a lawsuit challenging that decision. Since there's been no restraining order issued by a judge, Hardin says the 3 new companies are proceeding with building out their growing operations. As it stands now, there's not a straightforward way to expand the number of cultivators and dispensaries beyond what's written into the amendment.
Now, to amend the state constitution, voters could go back to the polls via a statewide ballot proposal, approve additional growers and dispensaries that way. Or there is this ongoing question of could the state legislature take action via a vote to potentially amend that and allow for more growers. So that's an ongoing conversation.
However, now that the growing and dispensing operations are up and running, Hardin says the commission has just started accepting applications for processors and transporters.
Once that flower is grown and ready to go to the dispensary, it's really up to the grower and the dispensary. They can take that flower and at either location, grower or dispensary, turn it into an edible. They can turn it into a vape product. That's totally up to them. But now with this new license, the processor, it simply gives them the option of outsourcing that to a third party.
But it remains to be seen how much interest there is in the licenses, since both of those operations are now being done in-house at cultivation facilities and dispensaries. Amendment 98 doesn't limit the number of processors and transporter licenses, but the licensing process does come with a $5,000 application fee and a $100,000 bond.
So we could have, this time next year, we could have 2 transporters or 200. We really just don't know.
Overall, going into 2021, Hardin says the Department of Finance and Administration expects the marijuana industry and one other industry under its purview will both be just fine.
Medical marijuana and alcohol sales. Those are seem to be 2 industries that have really not only survived this pandemic, but are thriving.
According to data from Nielsen's National Market Research, alcohol sales outside of bars and restaurants have surged about 24% during the pandemic. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
According to Scott Hardin, since the first dispensary opened in mid-2019, Arkansans have spent $218 million to purchase more than 33,000 pounds of medical marijuana. While statewide sales average about $665,000 a day, Hardin says December 31st, 2020 was a record day. as sales surpassed $1.2 million. The Medical Marijuana Commission's first meeting of the new year, scheduled for January 19th.
In the background, the Jason Stein Quartet, featuring Northwest Arkansas's own Keith Jackson on saxophone. And I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday here on KUAF. We'll hear more of that bass clarinet, as well as vocalist Alicia Olatuja, Chris Potter, Kenny Kirkland, and much more. Join me for Shades of Jazz.
This is Ozarks at Large. Sick of being stuck inside yet? Maybe try taking up a new outdoor activity. Even during the winter, more people than ever are trading house slippers for hiking shoes. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth takes a look at the state of outdoor recreation during COVID-19.
In the spring of 2020, Chally Sims, the owner and manager of Pack Rat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, says she'd never seen so many people kayaking.
Late spring, lots of rain, lots of water in the rivers. People were buying kayaks. We sold what we had, and there were no more to be had anywhere in the United States. And we saw that again with, you know, like hiking equipment, even some clothing items, footwear. You know, there was a lot of pressure, I guess, put on, you know, available inventory for outdoor gear.
And a lot of businesses that sell that gear have seen an increase in sales as more people look to get outside because of the COVID-19 pandemic, according to the Outdoor Industry Association. And Sims says she noticed more of her new customers weren't just interested in outdoor activity, but also in finding those opportunities closer to home.
April, certainly May, people are like, we're going outside. Nobody really had the opportunity or could really travel. So I think it was just a natural progression that people go play in their backyard, because most people we'd see were doing things in years past, doing things locally. But a lot of people were buying gear to travel beyond, you know, Arkansas. I'm willing to bet a lot of people learned a lot about the state they live in, you know, this year or this past year.
And the outdoor recreation economy, that's everything from biking to RVs and gardening to hunting, has been steadily growing in the U.S. According to the Bureau for Economic Analysis, the market made up more than 2% of Arkansas's GDP in 2019. But in May, the U.S. Census Bureau ranked outdoor recreation as the second most impacted industry by COVID-19. And while the sector has seen a big boost from people wanting to get outside this past year, services that rely on travel and bringing groups of people together for excursions or guided tours are still struggling. Corey Burbage runs Ozark Adventure and Recreation based out of Huntsville, and he says most of his business is experience-based.
Everything we do is a face-to-face contact with people where we take them out and we guide them. And so with COVID, we didn't know how that was going to pan out, because everything we do is talking to people and being with people about 90% of the time.
Burbage says the pandemic shut down operations in March, the beginning of his busiest season. But as restrictions lifted and his company put in more protocols to ensure patron safety, he saw a spike in sales by the summer.
We wanted to limit the amount of interaction with people, so we scaled back our events, but all the ones we had available sold out as soon as the restrictions were lifted, so people were ready to get out and get outdoors.
And Sims says Pack Rat's only event this past year was a virtual film festival, but the interest was still there. And Burbage says Ozark Adventure and Recreation is still selling out of its guided tours.
Coming into throughout the winter this year, we've been, you know, constantly selling out our events, and the ones we have planned for this spring, our two-day adventures, have completely sold out already too. So it's been nothing but ticking up, and I think it's going to stay that way.
And all of this uptick in interest is causing stores to think a little bit more about preparing for the future. Burbage opened a storefront location in Huntsville in the summer, and like Sims, he also had a shortage of kayaks. But this year, he says he's ready.
We made sure to contact the people that we are going to order all of our stuff from early on. That way we can make sure to get the product we need before any supply run out if we have any peak coming into this spring, COVID peaks. So we wanted to make sure we had covered our basis and we were prepared coming into 2021 because we got a lot of big plans with our Huntsville store and the kayak rentals coming out of there.
And Sims says she thinks the next step for capitalizing on the excitement for outdoor recreation is to give people more skills and knowledge.
I mean, we're always adding additional, you know, educational clinics because that's important to us to offer people a place to come for, you know, information, you know, education so that people can go out and have fun, be safe, and understand, you know, what it means to be a good steward, you know, leave no trace, pick up your trash, you know, pack out everything that you take in with you, you know, things like that. I guess by having our educational clinics and just, you know, talking to people when they come in the store, letting people know they can come in and pick our brains about places to go so that we can, you know, hopefully match people to spaces and activities that they have an interest in. And so by promoting, you know, what we have here.
Long term, she suspects that interest will sustain itself and even grow in 2021.
You know, thousands and thousands of public lands, you know, acres of the Ozark National Forest. There's biking, there's paddling. I guess we're really not wanting at this point, to be honest. You know, I think a lot of people haven't even discovered a lot of stuff that we have here.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
The Chancellor of the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith, Dr. Teresa Riley, is now a member of the Board of Directors of the United States Marshals Museum, the announcement made yesterday in a press release. She's been the UAFS Chancellor since July 2019. And officials with the Arkansas Scholarship Lottery are warning of scams trying to piggyback off of massive Mega Millions and Powerball jackpots available this weekend. The scams purport to be lottery officials declaring a person has won a lottery prize. Arkansas lottery officials also remind us that if we didn't buy a lottery ticket, we couldn't have won a lottery prize no matter what, the voice on the other end of the phone line says.
The Scott Family Amazium encourages more fun in 2021. Art and science intersect through fun, interactive experiences designed for the whole family. The Amazium has enhanced health and safety protocols and plenty of space for physical distancing. More information and ticket reservations available at amazium.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me via Zoom from her home office in Bella Vista is Becca Martin Brown, the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Welcome back, Becca.
Yay! I cannot prove this to you guys that are listening, but I can see Kyle, and he is back, and he seems to be well.
I am.
He can see me, and he's not going to tell you how bad I look. Well, I feel like talking about art stuff right now may be the silliest thing in the world, but then again,
no.
I watched the Theater Squared production of A Christmas Carol. I had put off doing the streaming theater because I don't really like movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't see how this would be any different than a movie.
But
I finally decided I really wanted to see it, and I still had the link to it. So I sat down and watched it. And I didn't forget that I was sitting at a computer screen. But all of the joy of live theater just came pouring out of it.
That's good to hear. I myself haven't yet watched it either. But, you know, someday, and we're getting vaccines and people are getting vaccinated. I know it's not tomorrow, but someday we're going to be able to be back in theaters with actors in the same building with us.
Well, if you are starving for live theater, Theater Squared has a new show opening this coming week that I don't know anything about except what I've read from my reporter, Laura Hightower. It's called Schoolgirls or the African Mean Girls Play. Mm. And the premise is to talk about how even in the African American community, there's this thing about how white you are, how light colored you are, how long your hair is. So it's a serious play, but there's also a lot of laughter in it. And I know now and can tell you for real that seeing it streaming will feel almost as good as going to the theater. Again, the show that's opening is called Schoolgirls or the African Mean Girls Play. It starts on January 20th, and tickets are $20 to $35 at theater2.org. You can read all about it in this coming Sunday's What's Up, because Laura Hightower is an amazing actor herself and can tell you all the ins and outs of it. If you're looking for something to go do live and there are still tickets left, Walton Arts Center has a live cabaret show Saturday night at 8 o'clock called Charming, A Tale of an American Prince. The actor is from Texas. He says he's a Texas native bitten by the theater bug at a very young age. The cabaret performance tells the tale of one prince's trek from the faraway kingdom of Texas to a castle in the East Village. Including music by Sondheim and Rodgers and Hammerstein and Prince. And this guy's really done a lot of, he's been in Wicked, he's been in Cirque du Soleil's Paramore, he's been in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and Beauty and the Beast, so he's like the real thing.
COVID protocols are in place at Walton Arts Center.
COVID protocols are in place. They're in the big auditorium with a very limited seating, and you have to wear your masks until you get to your seats, and there's four seats between your group and anybody else, and a row between your group and everybody else. It's as safe as you can be right now. And for $15, it might be just what your doctor ordered. Check on tickets at 443-5600. Now, if you're still staying home, there's a really cool program for you Saturday at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History via Facebook. And this week, they're going to talk about Essie Ward. Essie Ward, when I wrote about it, I said in the lead that she didn't look anything like a big city artist, and it's likely a big city artist wouldn't have considered her paintings art. She was born in Searcy County in 1902, worked hard on the farm all her life, and then when she got older and less well, she put down the plow and picked up a paintbrush and does this American Gothic sort of art.
Yeah.
That recap what life was like on the farm. And so Kim Hosey, who's an education specialist at the Shiloh Museum, is doing a program where she's going to talk about Essie, and then she's going to help you make a painting in the style of Essie Ward.
And this is at 10:30 Saturday?
10:30 Saturday on the Shiloh Museum's Facebook page. It is free. All you have to do is show up, paintbrushes in hand. And that ought to keep you until we come back next week.
Well, that sounds like a deal. Becca, thank you for continuing to be this lifeline for us as we continue to try to navigate through what is a very off-putting and weird time.
I am not giving up on the arts until we get out the other side and I can hug the stuffing out of some people. You're on the list.
I know, I'm forewarned, and that's okay. That's okay. Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. You can find out about all of this and much more in What's Up on Sunday. That comes either digitally or physically.
Yeah, you can still have it as a magazine. It's inside your Sunday paper.
Thanks, Becca.
Thanks, Kyle.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Waldron. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors today included Jacqueline Froelich, Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzanna Sitek, and Daniel Carruth. Timothy Dennis produced today's show. Thanks to Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics and Becca Martin Brown with the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. We will be with you again Sunday morning at 9 a.m. for the next edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being here with us for this Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. Please take care of yourself.